Jean Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, September 21st. On this day in 1780, a military hero becomes a traitor as American General Benedict Arnold meets with British Major John Andre, plotting to hand over West Point to the enemy in return for money and a senior rank in the British Army. The plot was foiled. Andre was later hanged for his crime, but Arnold escaped prosecution. His name has become an adjective for someone who betrayed his country. In 1939, President Franklin Roosevelt goes before the U.S. Congress asking that the Neutrality Acts be repealed to allow America to send aid to countries besieged by Hitler's Nazi war machine as it rampaged across Europe. The acts were passed in earlier years in efforts to remain independent of any wars brewing around the world. And in 1981, Phillies ace Steve Carlton breaks Bob Gibson's National League record for strikeouts, retiring the 3,118th batter of his career. At 6'4" tall, Carlton was overpowering, utilizing his slider, a pitch that was extremely difficult to hit. Carlton started his career with the St. Louis Cardinals, winning back-to-back pennants for them in 1967 and 1968. After a stellar 20-9 season in 1971, Carlton demanded a higher salary, but he was traded to the Phillies. He pitched an outstanding season in 1972, going 27-10 in one of the most impressive performances in baseball history. He later helped the Phillies win the World Series in 1980. He won 4 Cy Young Awards and was admitted to the Baseball Hall of Fame in his very first year of eligibility in 1994. Sports fans these days have numerous ways to enjoy their favorite teams, on TV, on their iPads, even streaming on their cell phones. It wasn't always this way. Way back in the 1970s and early 1980s, cell phones didn't even exist, and personal computers were just an idea of some guy named Jobs, who would later transform the communications industry. Yet two men have followed sports in print and on the radio for decades. Tennis, football, baseball, basketball, soccer, track and field, and other leisure pursuits popular across America. Red Hamer covered tennis, the Penn Relays, and other sports for the Evening Bulletin for many years. He's met numerous sports figures, including tennis champ Rod Laver and several others over the decades. He's since become a well-known photojournalist, publishing several popular books on the Brandywine Valley and the Chesapeake Bay region. Bill Werndell has covered sports on both coasts, here in the Philadelphia area and out west in California, before returning to the Delaware Valley to resume his sports commentaries. Bill currently has his own show here on WCHE. These two pros have covered virtually every aspect of sports for more than 4 decades, and they're both here with us today. Red, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you, Gene.
Well, in light of today's This Day in History, I have to throw out the first question. This goes to both of you. Did either one of you ever meet Steve Carlton?
Many, many times. I've been with Steve Carlton on a professional basis and as well as a social basis. Yes, I've met Lefty Steve Carlton on numerous occasions.
The Southpaw.
The Southpaw.
Yeah, how about you, Red?
No, we used to have a beekeeper in Westchester who was a really good friend of Steve Carlton.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting guy.
That's as close as I got to him.
I gave him a book on cybernetics. I was taking a course at St. Joe's University, mm-hmm. and I gave him the book, and he always appreciated it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would not talk to the media after an article by Bill Conlon. He shut everybody out. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed him after his playing days were over one time, I believe. I've talked to him on the phone a couple of times, mm-hmm. but Steve's been very distant with the media, and there was reasons for that.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. You know, he's considered one of the best pitchers ever.
One of the greatest left-handers of all time, yeah. and there might be an argument to be made that he was the greatest left-handed pitcher of all time. People may say Warren Spahn, but Carlton, for my money, was right there with Warren Spahn.
For a short period, maybe Sandy Koufax?
Well, that's the guy. I mean, for a short period of time, greatest, most dominant left-handed pitcher. Mm-hmm. It was unfortunate that Sandy had the elbow spurs. They didn't have Tommy John surgery back in the day. Mm-hmm. Very good point, Gene. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking about wins. I mean, mm-hmm. Spahn has the most wins for a left-handed pitcher. Carlton second. But if Koufax would have been healthy, maybe Koufax would have won 400 games.
Yeah.
Great, great pitcher. And he lives in this area in the summertime.
Oh, I was not aware of that. Mm-hmm. Now, first to you, Red. Red, where are you from?
Upper Darby.
You're from this area. Mm-hmm. And I know you went to Gettysburg College, one of my favorite schools in the region. Mm-hmm. Now, you ran track there?
I ran the half mile, the mile, and the 2 mile. John Yovickson was my track coach. He was also the football coach there.
Mm.
And, he stunted my growth. He ran me all three events in one day.
Was Jim Ward the quarterback at Gettysburg when you were there?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Oh, my Lord. Mm-hmm. Now, we've gotten a lot of old memories here, so we've got people who've been following sports here for a long, long time, so hopefully we'll generate some call-ins and questions. And you also were an excellent tennis player. Tell us a little bit about your tennis career.
I picked up a racket out of my father's closet when I was 12 years old. Mm. Took it down to the local junior high school and started hitting balls against a brick wall. And I was just... I became in love with the game. And a gentleman from the Pennsylvania School for the Deaf came over to the courts one day, and he took me out to the courts, and he was a semifinalist in the Nationals, and he ran me through all the strokes and everything. Mm-hmm. Then he used to bring these guys in from Philadelphia, and I would play them. Mm. And so that's where I really honed my skills. But I played, I guess, 65 years.
Mm.
And when I was 60, I was ranked in four states.
Mm.
Played Bobby Riggs in an exhibition at the Vic Sacious Indoor Tennis Center in 1971. That's the same year I ran the Boston Marathon.
Oh, my Lord. You also said privately, you said you had actually played Rod Laver?
We did a picture story for the Bulletin.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't actually play. I hit a few shots with him.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But it was just it was something to write about.
Sure.
He was in town to do the U.S. Pro Indoor.
Excellent. Now, Bill, where are you from?
I'm from Sharon Hill, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
Born and raised, born in Darby, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Fitzgerald Mercy, lived in Philadelphia for a few years, but grew up in Sharon Hill, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
But he mentioned Rod Laver. I remember Rod Laver being on the parking lot of the Q in San Diego. Now, that's where he lives, in San Diego, California,
mm-hmm.
Carlsbad.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about the U.S. Pro Indoor mm-hmm. and how it made tennis a must-see event. Mm-hmm. And he said he's very upset with today's tennis players because they don't give back. He said we should be on a tour of the United States every year, Philadelphia, Boston, New York,
mm-hmm.
Houston,
mm-hmm.
L.A., and he said that's why tennis is taking a back seat to the other sports, because these other sports are promoting themselves a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can have the U.S. Open, the French Open, the Australian Open,
mm-hmm.
but he said we got to do more in the United States to promote the game of tennis. Do you agree with him?
One of the problems is that we don't have any players in the top 10. We used to have Agassi playing Sampras all the time, and that was a big draw in tennis.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have the U.S. Grass court circuit with a week stop at the Marion Cricket Club. For 27 years, Bill Clothier ran that.
Mm.
And that was a fantastic draw. But we don't have that anymore.
That had some greats, John McEnroe, Arthur Ashe.
Well, yes. All the great players in the country and the world used to come there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Roy Emerson, who he won maybe 16 majors.
Mm.
These Aussies were really funny. They lived on their beer, and we had to drag them from out from under the clubhouse to get them to play. You know,
they love tennis. Bill, did you play sports in your
day? Yeah, I played basketball, a little baseball.
You did?
I started to follow sports when I. Well, really, I followed sports as a kid, and then I started at Channel 6 in 1966 with the likes of Les Kiter, Chuck Bednarik, Stan Hockman, of course, my good friend Bill White, who's a pretty good tennis player in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
I started there, and you know, in the mailroom. Then I moved up to the newsreel, worked sports on a part-time basis, and then became the first full-time sports producer in the city of Philadelphia in 1974, September of 1974.
Now, see, your professional careers are roughly coincident.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, just curious, had you met each other before?
Oh, yes, I remember, Bill, yeah.
So you've known each other.
I was at the Bulletin 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
I covered about 18 sports there.
Mm-hmm.
I was in and out of the office, and I did layout. I was more of a newspaper man than a writer.
Mm-hmm.
A writer would put lace on their paragraphs, but I was a reporter type.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in the office. I wrote all the headlines, all the captions. I was really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing. Talk about tennis. I remember one time, Kenny Mugler used to be the PR man for the U.S. Pro Indoor. Marilyn and her husband, Ed Fernberger, ran the event. Mm. So I called Kenny. I said, what time is Jimmy Connors going to hit today? He said, 7 a.m. So I called the station and said, I need a crew at 6:45 at the Spectrum because Connors is hitting, right? And I saw him there, and he remembered I did an interview with him the year before, with all that controversy about Patty Maguire and all that stuff, the Playboy Bunny, remember? And I didn't cheap shot him. I asked him a question, and we went on from there. So he's practicing for the event that night, and he's hitting the balls, and he sees me. And he goes, you want to do the interview now? I said, no, finish your practice session. And then Channel 6 at the time was doing Good Morning. I don't know what the show was. It was with a number of people, and they asked him to do an interview. Said, I've done my one interview for the day. I'm out of here. That made me feel real good. But Jimmy Connors, I thought, sometimes got a bad rap. I thought Jimmy Connors was one of the elite players of all time. He's a Hall of Famer, no question about it.
Well, he was a fighter, and he was more along the lines of a McEnroe,
right?
A fighter.
Yeah.
The difference is McEnroe was a great net player. He only hit a serve 77 miles an hour. That was the top speed of his serve. Mm. But that enabled him to get to the net fast, and he had great hands.
Connors was a power player.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. Right.
Yeah, Connors was really, you know, both, when he served. I'll bet you his serves were close to 100 miles an hour. They didn't have a clock back then. I don't think.
No, well, they didn't. They didn't use a clock. Now the top speed is 157 miles
right.
an hour because they use all new equipment.
And that's the other thing. You mentioned Rod Laver, and I said to Gene, I said, he, in my opinion, was the greatest tennis player of all time because he played with a wooden racket. Could you see him with all this sophisticated equipment today?
He'd be off
the charts.
Great player. We're gonna have to continue this. We're gonna take a short commercial break, and then we'll be back with both Red Hamer and Bill Werndale talking about sports legends.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call, and they'll handle the rest. Podcast. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SirocCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini services Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer. 610-873-1696.
WCHE 1520 AM. Local news at the top of each hour and updated whenever news breaks, including on our Facebook page and our website, WCHE1520.com.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today, we're talking about sports legends with two of the best-known names in the region, Red Hamer and Bill Werndell. Red and Bill, I think you've both covered the Penn Relays for a long time. I actually ran track for 1 year, but was not exceptional. But I did know some very, very good runners, including a guy named John Boucher at Lower Marion High School, who was an excellent runner, and Vahan Janjigian, who was a buddy of mine at Lower Marion, who I believe held the record for the Lower Marion High School track. But covering the Penn Relays, just give us a little bit about your background and experiences covering the Penn Relays.
Well, one of the greatest eras in track and field was when Jumbo Elliott was the coach at Villanova. Mm. And they had stars from all over the world.
Mostly Ireland.
Marty Lecorrey.
Right. Yeah. Well, Marty was a homegrown father.
No, he was a homegrown. Mm. But Noel Carroll was a great half miler. Mm. And we had a kid from Kennett Square called the Kennett Comet. Mm. And the 400, and his time was down in the 43s. I mean, it was world-class even today.
Mm. Eamon Coghlan was another guy from abroad.
Yeah, that's a little bit later. And also a guy by the name of Frank Budd, who I covered at Randall's Island in New York when he set the world record for the 100 in 9-2.
Mm. Now, Frank Budd was in the Eagles training camp.
Mm.
And
yes, he was.
The one problem with Frank Budd, he couldn't catch the football.
He didn't have the hands.
He could run like the wind, but he just couldn't run, catch the football.
He was shot in 1975 and killed.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah,
really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When did he try out for the Eagles?
Back in the 60s.
This is before Roman Gabriel?
Yes, before Roman. I think it was in the during the Nick Skorich or Joe Kuharik era. Right there.
Talking about the Eagles in 1960, one of the greatest athletes ever to come out of Westchester University was Chuck Weber. Mm. And he was a linebacker with Chuck Bednarik in that same...
Well, he was the middle linebacker. Chuck was the outside backer.
That's right, yeah.
Chuck Weber, unfortunately, I believe, is out in California in a nursing home.
Alzheimer's, yes.
Yeah, really a great, great player. And then the other guy, the other linebacker on this team, and I've talked to Pete Retzlaff a number of times. One guy, Pete Retzlaff, should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Mm. And another guy is Maxie Bond, who was an outstanding linebacker.
Right.
Started as a rookie on that championship team in 1960.
Ever meet Dick Vermeil?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Many times?
I've talked to Dick Vermeil on the phone at least once every 3 weeks.
Is that right?
Tremendous individual. Mm. And what he does for the Boy Scouts of Chester County is beyond belief. Mm. I mean, they raised over $250,000 at his golf tournament this year. Mm. I mean, it's an unbelievable event.
Now, did he play football?
At San Jose State. Matter of fact, San Jose State has an athletic facility they're building, and it's being named after Dick Vermeil and Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh and Dick Vermeil went to the same college at the same time.
Mm. That's amazing.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Red first, who are some of your favorite sports celebrities or personalities, athletes over there?
Arthur Ashe, definitely. And, of course, they named a stadium after him in Queens.
He was the first black man to play win Wimbledon?
Yes, he won Wimbledon back in around 1972 or so, yeah. He won the U.S. Open in 1968, and that was the first pro indoor open. It was amateur. They paid him under the table before then.
Mm.
He told me he didn't make much money, though, that first year.
Mm-hmm. You ever meet Arthur Ashe?
Yes, one time. One time, and they had an event in Philadelphia and we were covering. But I did not know him as intimately as Red.
Mm-hmm. Now, who are some of your favorite sports celebrities over the decades?
One of my favorite players of all times, regardless of sports, was Dick Allen.
Mm.
Unquestionably.
I know him as Richie.
Without a doubt, he was the greatest offensive force I ever saw in a Phillies uniform. And that includes Mike Schmidt.
Mm.
That's how devastating he was.
That.
He was the best. And another guy that I had an opportunity to my first interview ever was Wilton Norman Chamberlain.
Mm.
The Big Dipper.
Oh, my God.
And I got to know his head coach in San Diego quite well, Alex Hannum, and he told me some great stories about Will.
Mm.
Those two guys jump out right away. Of course, my best friend in the world, Bill White, you mentioned Dick Vermeil.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so many people that I've crossed paths with and still have a great, great relationship with them years later.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Ryan of the Bulletin, nicknamed Will the Stilt.
Oh, yeah.
That was his nickname. He hated it.
Did they name, was it... Oh, no, I was thinking out in San Diego, they named a stadium after a sportscaster, Jack Murphy Stadium?
Jack Murphy Stadium, yes.
Was he a famous sportscaster out there?
In San Diego, absolutely.
Right.
You mentioned Jack Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Ryan was the man that really covered high school sports for the Bulletin.
Mm.
Did an outstanding job. 1961, December 6th of 1971, Jack Ryan sat in the office of the legendary Jack Ferrante, who was coaching Monsignor Bonner, getting ready to play Southern High School. And we were a prohibitive favorite. Southern was outweighed us by 25, 30 pounds to a man, Monsignor Bonner. Bonner won the game 20-13. And Jack Ferrante, everybody talks about Vince Papale, and I love Vince. He's one of the great people. Jack Ferrante was the first legendary player, only played high school football, never played college ball, played on the Sandlots for the Wilmington Clippers, and signed with the Eagles, and he had 35 touchdown receptions and 166 catches in his NFL career. What a great player.
That's outstanding.
Blackjack Ferrante was his name, and he was the original invincible, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. We're going to just briefly go back to baseball. Either one of you gentlemen ever met the great Tony Gwynn?
Oh, absolutely. I spent many a day with Tony Gwynn. Many a day.
Wonderful guy.
Great guy. Tremendous individual. And probably the best modern-day hitter of all times. Just a great, great guy. Spent many a day in the Padre locker room with him on the field.
I believe he had 8 batting titles?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a great hitter.
And not many people know this, but since I got my MBA out at San Diego State in California, Tony Gwynn actually played basketball and baseball, and he wasn't sure which one he wanted to pursue. Now, if you saw Tony Gwynn in his later years, you would guess that this guy would never play basketball. But apparently he was a great point guard,
and they played in old Peterson Gym, which seated about 1,200 people, the size of a high school gym. But Tony was, I think he was drafted by an NBA team.
Really?
I think. I'm not sure. I could be mistaken on that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a very good basketball player at San Diego State.
Now, just staying on baseball, tell us a little bit about your favorite stories about the Phillies. First of all, you read some of your favorite stories related to the Phillies.
1964, when the Phillies were leading by, 9 or 10 games?
10 games.
And that was a Wes Covington, Johnny Callison, all those guys. And they lost 9 or 10 straight.
Mm.
I was painting my bathroom, and they went right down the toilet.
I will tell you a story about that. The Phillies were up 6.5 games with 12 games to play. Today is the anniversary of that 10-game losing streak.
Oh, my Lord.
When Chico Ruiz stole home on the Phillies with Frank Robinson at the plate, a Hall of Fame hitter.
Mm.
And it was unbelievable. I was in my bedroom listening to transistor radio. And the Cardinals overtook the Phillies.
Mm.
And one of the Cardinal players right. who really led the charges down the stretch for the Cardinals, was my best friend in the world, Bill White. Mm. And I'll tell you this story. We're out on a fishing trip one day, years later, like in the early 70s, and I said, Bill, you put a dagger in my heart because you guys overtook the Phillies because I was going to go to one of those World Series games. Mm. And he kind of chuckled and he said, yeah, I had a great month of September.
Well, related to the 1980 Phillies, I was actually in graduate school at the University of Texas at Austin, and the Phillies had a great series against the Astros, which was absolutely outstanding. And I thought, wow, you get much better than this. And then Tug McGraw, you got to believe, helped them win. In fact, I believe won the final game, did he not?
He saved the final game. He got the final out, yep.
Yeah, he got the final out, and he hit the picture of Tugger jumping up in the air with his hands in the air will remain in my mind forever.
Bob Boone was the catcher, yep.
Yeah.
I was
now,
at that game.
Now, here's a trivia question. I'm not sure I know the exact answer. True or false, was Rose, Morgan, and Concepcion on the 1980 Phillies?
No.
Or was it just Rose and Morgan?
Just Rose. Morgan didn't come to the 1983 season.
Mm.
Rose was the only guy. He made that catch when the ball bounced off Bob Boone's glove. And
right.
Rose made the catch. I mean, it's unfortunate what happened to Pete, and that could have been eliminated early on because baseball knew Pete Rose had a gambling problem.
Mm-hmm.
But because he put fannies in the seats, they looked the other way.
Right.
And baseball's got to be held accountable for their actions as well.
Right. Red, you're a baseball fan. I know you're more of a tennis fan, but obviously you covered the Phillies for many years. Did you meet many of the Phillies?
No, I never had the opportunity. I covered the Phillies one time when I was at the Bulletin.
Mm.
They were in last place. I think even my coffee froze over. It was so cold.
They had some bad teams in the late 50s, early 60s. I mean, I was at the airport. This is how much of a junkie I was with sports. I was at the airport after they snapped the 23-game losing streak to the Milwaukee Braves. They flew back at 2:30 in the morning, and I convinced my parents to take me down to the airport. And there was about 200 people there. But they had lost 23 games in a row. And that was a disaster.
Well, actually, the 72 season with Carlton, he won 27 of their 59 games.
Exactly.
That which was outstanding.
That was a deplorable team.
Yep. Yeah.
And that was, I believe, was Frank Lucchese still the manager? I think he was. He was an awful manager. Probably the worst manager in Phillies history.
Now, Red, you've got a lot of other pursuits. You've published several different books, The Four Seasons of Chester County. You had some beautiful books, Christmas in Chester County, books on the Chesapeake area. What are your latest projects? And I think you've got some events coming up in the next few weeks.
Well, I have about 16 shows I'll be doing between now and Christmas time. One of the best will be the Dilworth Town Wine Festival, which is October the 9th. That's on a Sunday from 12 noon to 4 in the afternoon.
Mm.
And the charity there is Cancer, and the Chester County Hospital runs that.
Excellent.
I've been in the Exon Square Mall for years and years and years, for about 6 weeks at a time, selling my books and prints.
Mm-hmm.
But and I have about over 100 pictures in the Paley Hospital.
Mm.
If you ever end up on the third floor, you just look between your legs there, right on the wall, it's one of my pictures.
A lot of your photographs.
I have another 17 in the Phoenixville Hospital.
Excellent. And I know your website is redhamer.com, H-A-M-E-R.com. And, Bill, you've got your own show here on
Sports Chatter at Chester County, and we do it daily. And we have some interesting guests come on every day.
Excellent. I've heard your show, and it's great. But by the way, the work of both you gentlemen is excellent, and I just wanted to thank you so much for being on the show. Be sure to turn in next Wednesday, the 28th, at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be speaking with Chester County artist Randall Graham. And tomorrow, Thursday, September 22nd, I'll be portraying Founding Father Alexander Hamilton at the Easttown Library at 7 p.m. The library's at 720 First Avenue in Berwyn. Join us for this free event, A Conversation with Alexander Hamilton. Thank you all so much for joining us today for Living History.